You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Johnson.
The John Lovitz Comedy Club in Universal City Walk and streaming live on Ustream. This is AfterBuzz TV for the Breaking Bad season finale. Tonight's host is Extras Maria Menounos. Joining Maria are co-hosts Paul Ashton, John Comerford, and Kevin Undergaro. Also joining tonight's discussion will be the stars of the AMC hit series. And now, picking up where the show leaves off, and the buzz continues, Maria Menounos!
Thank you, everyone. Welcome to the John Lovitz Club. Welcome to the Breaking Bad Season 4, Episode 13, Face Off Season Finale. And what a finale it was.
Very aptly titled.
Face Off.
Remember the John Woo film, Face Off, with Nicolas Cage and... And
yeah.
Thank you. I mean, it almost like had that kind of action sort of stuff toward the end.
And once again, the great Vince Gilligan double entendre. It's the face off between Walt and Gus, and yet literally the face off.
Face off.
Half a face off. Yeah,
a little bit of Aaron Eckhart in Dark Knight with the two face. It reminded me of the CGI of that whole, the way they did that in Dark Knight. It was incredible.
Incredible. I know, just when you think, I'm like, oh no, he's getting away with it again. And then just see the other side, you're like, oh, he's gone.
That was such a great moment. And like when Gus came back out of the door. Yeah. And in a way kind of reflected like so many moments in the show that
yes.
just had like an unexpected sort of almost black comic quality. And just when you think he's surely gone, in the same way that he would always like walk toward the machine gun fire and it would miraculously miss him. He walks out of the door and you think,
wow, he dodged another bullet.
The bomb's backfired, it's gone out the other way or something. There's like a wheelchair on the lawn. And no, fortunately he lost half his head.
I mean, it's like ding dong, the witch is dead,
yeah.
right? I mean, Gus is gone, I think. I mean, there's...
No, Gus is gone.
I think he's
no
gone.
One checked a pulse.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so scared.
And all of a sudden, now we really see what is ahead in the final season, and that is there's a power vacuum.
But can I just ask everyone who here is excited that Walt won?
Yeah, everybody in here cheered.
Except it was.
Everybody cheered.
And by the way, and Walt, you can tell that character he's been through so much. His cancer, he felt like he got the short end of the stick in life. I felt as though he had waited almost 50 years to say. Those two words.
Yeah, good point.
I won.
Yeah.
I know. And what a great way to watch this finale where he wins than with an entire crowd of Breaking Bad fans who were so excited to
yeah.
see him.
Yeah, it was. It was amazing.
If we had done this last season, it wouldn't have felt the same, but like we're all like, yes!
No, it was just great writing. I mean, because they kicked the crap out of him for these 11 or 12 episodes to brought him down as far down as he could be brought, only for this like. Ultimate.
Yeah, he's been carrying the wounds of his beaten down chemistry life, the millions that he missed out on by not being in that partnership that was sort of explored in the first couple of
sickness
seasons.
Sickness for the work he had done in the past with chemicals.
Yeah,
and this season
not having Jesse by his side as his partner. I mean, they were at odds most of this season.
There's a bit of sweetness to it though. He did win, but the question is at what cost? And I think
because they didn't take him down as far. Because tonight he went. This is the farthest he's ever been down. He poisoned the child.
He said to Jesse last week, yeah. "Who is the only guy you know who is capable of putting a child's life in danger?"
Good
and
point.
He was talking about now himself.
Oh, it's gonna he get has, so ugly because you know between this and Jane. I mean, Jesse's got a lot of things to figure out next season.
That's
a
right.
A lot of things that are going to, like,
there are a couple of things that they need to look after really quickly. They need to go and get rid of those tapes that are sitting on Gus's computer at El Pollo Loco, because that's pretty damning.
You know,
secondly...
El Pollo Loco?
I'm Australian. It's all a different language.
It's all loco.
This is a different language to me. We don't speak like this back home. English is my... Anyway, that's dead. They need to take the fire to that little plant by Walt's pool, or that's going to come back to haunt him.
I think, too, the crazy thing is that, you know, Walt is so smart. And so he figures out that Hector and Gus are enemies, goes for it, figures it out, and then it's like, oh, no, it doesn't end here. Gus is dead. Now we got to blow up the lab so that Hank, who's on the trail of the lab, doesn't have anything. But, John, you think... Yeah.
Well, it's a crime scene. I mean, they're going to know that, you know, this big underground, you know, cave.
But he's recording those things at a different location. So even though they burnt the lab, the recordings are still somewhere else.
Then it's going to get even crazier because then Hank is going to figure all of this out.
Do you guys know
Walt was the only one who was not present in the house when all these explosions are going off and all this people are dying. And
Skylar's really, you know, for the first time... Skylar's really for the first time just in that last phone conversation got an admission from Walt that he's behind not only drugs but taking other people's lives.
He said to her, "I am the danger at the door."
That's right.
I am the knock at
and
the
he
door.
Was
and now he's
yeah,
him.
And he was so passionate when he said it. It was like he had
this
waited
is the
a long time.
Heisenberg.
Right.
I am the danger.
She's like Heisenberg coming. Like she's badass too.
And I mean, you know, this is we were talking a couple of weeks ago on our Breaking Bad show about where we thought they were going to go in the final season and whether Gus would be taken down at the end of this season or not. And it is so exciting that he's gone in a way as much as it the biggest tragedy or one of the biggest tragedies is that we won't get to see him in the final season because is that guy not just so incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, I sincerely hope that there's some serious Emmy heat next season when they're eligible
Giancarlo.
Again.
Yeah, give it
because
up.
It's one of the most extraordinary portrayals of a sociopath I've ever seen. And but now the trajectory is wide open for Walt to fulfill his full Breaking Bad and become the big kingpin.
There's a, you know, Vince Gilligan laid a clue out to who the next... like super villain's going to be.
Oh,
did anyone pick
that?
It up?
No, what was this?
If you looked at the photo in, not Hector, who's the old...
Salamanca.
Hector. If you look in Hector's room, did you guys notice the photo on his bed?
Yeah,
right. There was the two twins in the background, but there was one kid that was maybe a year or two older who, just by the placement of the photo, was in the foreground... Mm-hmm. In a very arrogant pose, and if you guys are like me, you'll probably watch the show again to see the clues, but if you look at this kid's stance, clearly there's another one there, and he's more powerful than the other two behind him. And I feel like that's the one on the horizon that you're going to have to deal with next season.
Ooh.
So.
Yeah, it's...
Tuco's
could be Tuco, yeah. But...
Isn't Tuco dead?
It could be, and it could be the grandson that already was
that
shot.
Was the pool guy. I thought that was the kid in the
but
pool.
But it could be the grandson that was already shot, but I don't know.
Either way, someone's going to be after him.
The vacuum has got to get filled. So
that's right. That whole business needs to be run still, or it's there to be run. The opportunity is there. The question is
who?
Who and how?
And there's still the Chilean connection. We don't know who that is or who that could possibly be.
So much to go over, but I'm going to have to kick you guys out because I'm going to...
Gladly.
Already?
I can't wait to hear... Are you kidding me?
Right.
I can't wait to hear from our stars. I want to get out of here.
Right. Who wants Dean Norris, RJ Mitty, and Aaron Paul to show up? We're going to go to commercial right now, and we're going to bring in the stars, and we're going to say thank you to my lovely co-hosts of AfterBuzz TV, Paul Ashton, John Comerford, and Kevin Undergaro. Thank you guys
so much.
Thank
you, everybody.
Is about. Janice is a drama queen.
This is the divide that is going to carry the series.
Give us a call. 424-256-1729. 424-256-1729.
Big television, and they want it to be as dramatic as possible.
I mean, it's Shakespearean.
You never know what goes on behind closed doors.
Find out why AfterBuzz TV is the number one source for after-show content.
Now, in the eyes of Jimmy... Ducky is a villain.
424-256-1729.
424-256-1729.
I mean, who would you guys rather hear that from? Your husband or your best friend?
The wig!
The wig will come out.
When the TV show is over, get your After Buzz on.
Breaking Bad, Season 4, Episode 13, Face Off with the stars of Breaking Bad. season finale. And I'm so glad I got to watch it next to you guys, because you guys seem to be as excited about it as I was.
Oh, absolutely.
It was fantastic. Awesome.
And watching it with an audience, have you guys done that before?
I've done it once before, and it's amazing because the people respond to things that you don't necessarily think they're going to respond to in a different way, and it's kind of cool.
Well, I think the tone of this one, and I don't know if it's Vince's directing and his take on it, was a little comedic. And I didn't know if it was because we were watching it together as an audience and we were like a little giddy, or if it was really comedic. But, you know, my counterparts who host this every week with me were like, no, we think it was comedic in tone.
Yeah, I think the first half was very first time I saw this episode, I saw it maybe with, you know, 12, 15 people, and I mean, all of us were just dying laughing. I mean, the first half is a riot, but so dark.
And Walt crawling through Saul's door.
Yeah.
I think that's always been one of the best parts about Breaking Bad, is that it brings dark comedy to, otherwise it'd be insufferable, you know. But the fact that you can laugh at a lot of these things makes it what it is, you know.
Yeah. Did you guys know Gus was going to die all along this season?
Not until, like, close to the end.
Yeah.
When they started really talking about it, and they were like, oh, wow.
Yeah,
really...
yeah. We don't really know what's going to happen. We don't have, like, the arc of the seasons. We, you know, we get, you know, one script at a time. And
I did. I knew.
Hank always knows.
Yeah, they keep it very close to their chest. And so I think I found out that he was going to go probably when we were shooting around episode 10,
yeah,
10, 11, something like that.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, in this episode, you guys, you and Walt kind of come together finally. You've been kind of distant for so long, and Gus has been trying to drive this wedge between you. Or, you know, maybe Walt had a hand in kind of creating the fact that Gus was trying to drive this wedge behind you.
Walt, God, what a vicious, horrible human being. I mean, he's great, but God.
Right?
Yeah. I want to, you know.
Kind of gone downhill from the first episode.
Yeah, he's definitely changed.
I just want to correct your previous guys here. They're trying to figure out who's going to get him. Homie's going to get him.
Yeah! Well, they kind of made you a fool in this episode. We're going to get to more of that. We got to go to commercial really quickly, and we'll be right back with more AfterBuzz Breaking Bad season finale breakdown.
Want to find out what the AfterBuzz is about?
Janice is a drama queen.
This is the divide that is going to carry the series.
Give us a call. 424-256-1729.
256-1729. This television, and you want it to be as dramatic as possible.
I mean, it's Shakespearean.
You never know what goes on behind closed doors.
Find out why AfterBuzz TV is the number one source for after-show content.
Now, in the eyes of Jimmy, Nucky is a villain.
424-256-1729.
424-256-1729. I mean, who would you guys rather hear that from? Your husband or your best friend?
The wig will come out.
When the TV show is over, get your After Buzz on.
It's working now.
It's working. We had to cut to commercial to fix Dean's mic there. So before we went to break, you had a comment that no one probably heard. So let's hear it again.
I said I was disagreeing with the gentlemen who were up here. They were trying to figure out who's in that picture, who's going to get Walt. And I said, Hank's getting Walt.
Yeah, baby. So, but they kind of, it seems like they kind of made you a fool in the end, because you were so onto it. You knew something was going on there. And you were really calm about it, but you were like, I know. And then Walt figures out how to kill Gus, all while you're in the living room, you know, waiting out this whole threat, and then they blow up the lab.
Yeah.
So now, are you going to find out?
Absolutely.
No beating around the bush there.
I've been holding off for 4 seasons, man. Whether they write it or not, I'm gonna find them.
I love
it. I do my own little mini-sode, I'm going to find them.
Yeah, good.
Crazy. And then the Lily of the Valley, you know, like you were saying, Walt is such an evil guy. I mean, he said in that last episode, you know, who's the one guy you know?
Yeah.
And it's him. I mean, obviously, it's in his backyard.
Yeah, he's so vicious. I mean, Jesse was right when he came up to his door and, you know, took his gun and had it to his face. Everything he was saying was Correct. And then he just got talked out of it.
Well, and tell me about that scene, because you go to him, you have the gun to his head, and you leave an imprint. Whose idea was it to leave the imprint?
Actually,
how did that happen?
You know what? During one take, that took all day to shoot. We were actually supposed to do another scene where we're trying to figure out how we are going to get Gus. And we've come up with a plan to make a bomb, and we actually make a bomb. But that got cut because this scene just took so long to shoot. But in one of the takes, Brian just, out of nowhere, I didn't know it was coming, he just grabs the gun and slams it against his head. And it just happened to leave that mark because he was just holding it so tight.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
That's intense. Yeah. Tell me about Walt and Brian and how different their intensity levels are, because I don't know if there is much of a difference.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. He's just really...
He's a sicko.
Yeah, he's a sicko.
Horrible human being.
I love it. And now there's no lab, so does that mean there's no work for you guys?
I'm hoping the RV comes back. Yeah, I really want the RV to come back, but we shall see.
And Hank, well, Dean,
yes.
Hank, is Hank going to suspect Walt more now that all that went down without his presence being near you in that time?
You know, I don't know because I don't write it. I think Vince has said to me that they're going to deal with that, that they're going to have a resolution to that situation. And they've been building it up for, you know, four seasons now. So I don't think that they're going to take the easy way out. I think he's going to find out, figure it out, and I'm not sure. And there's a story left after that as well, obviously. What's going to happen? What would he do? Blah, 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 blah. So I don't think they're going to skirt around it. And I think it'll be epic when he finds out.
Yeah.
So,
I think there's a lot of epic moments to be had between all of the cast members when they're finding out this stuff.
So I think that they're, they can't not resolve that issue. Yeah. I don't think.
So, I personally want Jesse to find out that Walt allowed Jane to die.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, right.
And I just would love, just as an actor playing this guy for so many years, I would just love to live that moment of what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
You know? Really? You did that? You asshole?
Right? And the two people, the only people you actually cared about in this show, right? Brock, Andrea, and Jane.
Yeah. Yeah, it's horrible.
So, how intense is it to shoot this show? Because as I'm watching it, my jaw is clenching, and I find myself, like, all just clenching most of the time when I watch these episodes. I don't know how you guys feel. But they're super intense. And, you know, this season, your character had so much darkness to go through. You were dealing with your wheelchair, you know, and all of your issues. And
I hated that thing.
I blew that thing up.
And your wife messing up the Cheetos or whatever chips order you had. I remember that.
Fritos.
It's an intense show for you guys. It was the Fritos. She went back and got them for you.
She better.
How difficult is it to shoot this?
It gets pretty intense at times, but we have to keep it light on set because otherwise we'd just be so unbelievably depressed. But having, you know, first of all, Bryan Cranston, I've said this so many times, he's truly a child trapped in a man's body. And he just breaks the tension with humor, and you have to. And it definitely is a struggle sometimes, but you just got to, you know, have fun with it.
It definitely counts that we all get along so well, on set and off. And it really, that's what few sets have and we're lucky to have, is we all get along so well to make this come together.
Yeah, it's truly a family.
Yeah, it really is. And I find it to be actually a really mellow set, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, Cranston goes from, you know, hey, how's the kids, to like fucking Heisenberg in a second. Seriously, he does. Because he directs sometimes. Remember, he used to direct. He didn't direct this season. But he's like, all right, put the lights over here. Great. You know. All right. That's how he works. You know?
Right.
I mean, you know, I mean, there's different scenes takes different, you know, have a different level of intensity, but it's not like everyone's walking around like this all the time, you know?
And so, when you guys first read this pilot, what were your initial thoughts?
I thought it was brilliant, but I never thought it would ever see the light of day.
Yeah, same here.
Best pilot I ever read.
Oh, hands
and I read
down.
A lot of pilots. Best pilot I ever read, and I thought the same thing.
Yeah,
I never get past the first.
You never see anything like this on TV, and this was before Mad Men had come out, and it was like AMC. Like,
Mad they, what?
Yeah, Mad Men.
Mad Men.
Yeah, yeah. But
well,
I'm
that's
like
that soap opera.
Yeah, stop it.
I love those guys. They know I love them. They know that.
But I'm like AMC. I just thought they played, you know, old westerns, and they're really wanting to launch their original programming with a teacher that's dying of lung cancer. So he decides to start cooking and selling meth to provide for his family. It just didn't. I didn't think it.
And believe me, there are a lot of old guys going, "Where's the old western, man? Who's this guy?" Yeah.
Wait. You know what's funny? My dad loves westerns. My dad is the one who turned me on to Breaking Bad.
I love your dad.
Now I get it.
Yeah, that's
now
great.
Now I get it.
Yeah, makes sense.
Because when my dad told me, "Maria, you gotta see this show, Breaking Bad. It's a very good show." And I'm like, "Dad, I'm not gonna watch a show you watch. You watch weird westerns and things." And then I watched it, and I was like, "Oh my God, you're right.
Nice.
You're right. That's what AMC was known for."
Yeah, it's true.
What did you?
Well, HBO
you
used to show movies too, you know. And then they, MTV used to show videos.
Good point. Good point. RJ, what did you think when you first read it?
When I first read Breaking Bad, I was like, this is fantastic, but it's going nowhere. Who is going to allow meth on television? It's like one of the most, it's like they'll show heroin, they'll show all these different drugs, but when it comes to meth, they're like, oh, nope. They like literally, they have a censor on this, and it was awesome to see that AMC has the balls to put this on television, and I was just... Wow, I'm actually a part of this. It's just...
God bless you, AMC, because it's my favorite show. Do you guys, when you get the script, do you read the entire script or do you just focus on your parts? Because I've heard some actors only like to focus on their parts and just keep to that.
I love reading the script. I mean, I'm just like any of you guys. I want to know what is happening, what's going on in the story. So, yeah, I definitely read the entirety.
Dean?
Yeah, I love reading this. That's my favorite. It's my favorite parts of the week, you know, getting that new script and reading it. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, definitely. The scripts that Vince and the other writers pull out are like actually movies in these papers. It's like when you pick them up and you're reading it, you can just see how everything is playing out. And like you're just like in awe of where is he going next?
If you ever get a chance to read one of these original scripts, which you probably can, I imagine they have them out somewhere, right?
Yeah.
But if we
pick your trash, we can.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But the stage directions, as they call them, the stuff in between the lines is so beautifully written. Like a lot of those moments that you see on the screen, mm-hmm. and you think like people are really good actors doing them, is because we're following like this awesome, not like, you know, moment for moment, but a description mm-hmm. of what that feels like, of what you're going through, right? And you then get to create that from that, but that description is a great one, right?
Oh, it's
like a cheat sheet.
It's like wow, okay, if I can play that, I'm doing okay.
And they also drop little notes to us. They're like, oh, Dean, you're going to do a great job in this. Or some of our, you know, the lighting department or Michael Slovis, our DP. And it's cool to have such a personal connection to this story.
Which the DP, by the way, first of all, everything on this show is perfection. And I mean that in the fairest possible way, obviously being such a fan. But the DP does such an incredible job. Those shots are like, you don't even see them in movies.
Yeah.
They're so brilliant.
Yeah.
And the production design is so brilliant. I mean, do they keep you informed as to what all these colors mean? We see lots of blues and lots of oranges and yellows. Do they tell you what these colors mean?
They do. I just don't get it. You know, it's very important to Vince, like the color palette. Like, Mr. White is green. And
you can call him Walter now.
Yeah, well, Walter.
Sorry.
Why do you call him Mr. White, by the way?
Because, well, thing is, yes, it's been four seasons, but it's really, it's only been about not even a year. About a year.
Not even a year.
And it's his teacher. Like, when I run into my teachers that I had in school, I'll see my theater teacher, Mrs. I call her Mrs. Link. I know her name's Nancy, but... For some reason, I just call her Mrs. Link.
So
is
that your choice to keep calling him Mr. White?
No, it's 100%. Okay. Everything's scripted. All the yo's, all the bitches, all of those are in the script as well. Yeah, it's great.
But back to the colors, you were saying Vince really is.
I mean, he loves that. I guess it makes sense.
I mean, love seeing it.
Yeah, I think it's great, but.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's
like Betsy's always wearing purple.
Oh, purple.
I mean, obviously, purple's a color of like royalty. We try to break it down each week.
Yeah.
But can you give us a little insight into any of the color palettes and what they mean? Do you guys?
It's, from what I understand, it's what, and I've talked with my stylist that is a very good friend of mine, and we're talking about that, and I've talked to the stylist on set, and they're like, oh, it's, you can tell when someone's going bad by the clothes they wear. Mm-hmm. It's like the darker they get on the show, the darker their clothes get.
Right.
Like when Jesse is like in like going through the dark things, he's wearing dark reds and blacks, and and just going through these different transformations. And as the character's changing, his clothes are changing as well. And it was really cool because I'm finally in black. So.
Oh yeah. Go bad. Everyone else is bad. You have to be pure and good.
I'm in pink. What does that make me?
You're in a wheelchair also.
You're on the way to being Barney.
Yeah. All I know is I have to go to a lot of wardrobe fittings for Vince to like look at the colors, you know.
Crazy. Well, what input do you guys have in your storylines and your characters, if any?
I have none in mind. I write all of his though. But.
The yos and the bitches.
I have absolutely none, really.
We don't really need to.
Yeah, no, it's just all 100% on the page.
Yeah, it's zero. You know, people always go, oh, do you go in there and talk to them about this? I'm like, you know, listen, we got like 7 geniuses who sit there for 10 hours a day for like 6 months. What am I going to give them, you know? Yeah. Hey, did you guys think about... Yeah, we thought about that like 6 weeks ago. You know, what do I got, you know? Yeah. Just let them write and just enjoy doing it, you know? Yeah.
I feel like Vince is kind of becoming, or at least proving himself to be, like the next Marty Scorsese of television.
Yeah,
how does he compare to other showrunners you guys have worked with?
It's a night and day difference for me with any showrunner I've worked with in the past. I mean, I love them all, but Vince is the most humble, kindest man I've ever worked for. But he comes up with just the most messed up stuff, and you wonder what is going on deep inside that man's
scary.
Brain. It's scary.
It's ridiculous.
You may wonder, but you never want to find out.
What is he like? I mean, I've never met him. What is he like?
Ugly.
He's a southern gentleman, man. He's a sweet, sweet man. He really is. He really is. Right?
Yeah, no, he's incredible. I mean, on set, he goes... He'll go, Brian, wow, that's such a great take. And Aaron is just really so good. And Helen, our script supervisor, you did a really great job on those notes. Like, he makes sure to compliment every single person. And it's incredible, and it's so rare, and it's so nice. He's just so genuine.
He really is just a genuine human being. Everything he does. And then as Aaron was saying, just the stuff that comes out of this man's head, you're like, what happened to you when you were a kid?
And so, I know you guys said you don't know too much, but at some point you know, like last season it ended with you, did you or did you not kill Gil?
Right.
Did you know the answer when you shot that
or
not?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it was supposed to be a question, to be honest. And I think a lot of people were confused because of a camera move that we had. It looked like the gun kind of moved off to the side a little bit. A lot of people thought maybe someone else maybe killed Jesse. I think it was meant to be known that Jesse just shot Gail in the face.
Really?
I mean, that's how I read it.
I would think it would be a cliffhanger because it was the season finale.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think it was just like the entire season... Jesse was saying that, you know what, he's the bad guy. Or at least he was trying to convince himself that he was the bad guy. And finally, it was the true loss of, I guess, innocence when he pulled that trigger. And he ended up being the bad guy, but I don't know.
So it started your spiral.
Yeah.
What And I want to ask you guys if you had anything similar to this. I know that you originally were supposed to just come on for a few episodes.
Yeah, I was supposed to, Jesse was supposed to die in like the second to last episode, I believe. And we actually were cut short. We were supposed to have 9 episodes in the first season, but it was cut short because of the writer's strike during that time. And so we ended up only having 6 plus the pilot. And I think he was supposed to die in episode 6 or maybe 7, I don't know.
So at what point and how did that change?
Well, I mean...
And then turn into an Emmy.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, thank God they didn't kill Jesse. No, I think when Vince was pitching the pilot around to just different networks, he had an arc of the first season, and... part of that arc was, well, Jesse brings him into this world, and then he dies this tragic death towards the end, and then Walt is left alone. But when we shot the pilot, they just really loved the chemistry that that Walt and Jesse had, and that what Brian and I were bringing to these characters, and they loved the. You know, just the butting head, tug of war.
Father, sonny,
odd couple sort of relationship of these characters. And they wanted more of that. And so they decided to completely change the story.
So cool. Did you guys know how long your characters were going to live in the series from the get-go? Or?
We still don't know how much longer they'll live. Because with Breaking Bad, as you see... anything can really happen to you. It's a matter of a bomb strapped to a wheelchair to a bomb strapped to a turtle. You really just never know. It's kind of scary because at any moment they're like, oh, you're dead. I was like, oh, okay.
I'm into the last second.
Yeah.
I'm all the way to the end.
Yeah.
It's what you put out to the universe.
Exactly.
So tell me about the audition process and how that all worked. I know you have a good story. Yeah. Tell me
how this... story is unreal. I think you got to go first.
Yeah.
No, you have it?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I actually auditioned 5 times, and 4 in L.A., and the 5th time in New Mexico with Brian and Anna. And I just started getting into the acting industry, and it was like... they're like, oh, we're looking for a script for you. Here, read this, go audition. It sounds just like you. And I was like, oh, okay. Started studying, and then I got into it and auditioned, and I was like, yeah, they like me, I think. And like 2 days later, they're like, okay, they want to see you again. So I come back in. I was like, they didn't really say much. They're like, yeah, whatever. It's an audition. I leave. I'm like, thank you. I come back. They're like, they call me again. Can you come in? Can you come in again? I was like, oh, okay. I come in again. And I'm like, yeah, they don't really say much. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I come in again the next time. And they're like, okay, well, can you fly to Albuquerque the next morning? You have another audition, but you have to do it in front of everyone down there because they're ready to film. And I'm like, sure, I'll go pack. Went
home. Ready to film the episode?
Ready to film the pilot, like literally.
When we did the table read, you weren't even officially on board yet, right?
It was my second audition when they did their first table read.
Yeah.
So they were like down to the wire.
And wasn't this like your first audition?
Yeah. Pretty much.
I mean, are you kidding me?
It was like I had like 3 other auditions, yeah, and then I got this one.
Man.
I was one of the lucky ones.
I mean, I'm so happy for you, but wow, I struggled.
I literally became an actor 3 months before I auditioned for Breaking Bad.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
I know, right?
You got it, right?
I've been loving it ever since. It's been an honor to be able to work with these guys, and I've definitely learned a lot.
What was the description of your character at the time? Because I want to get into a little bit of that.
It was actually, it didn't even say cerebral palsy. They mentioned it like one little bit that he walks on crutches. And it was like 15, 16-year-old kid, normal kid. Dark hair, somewhat tall. That's pretty much was it.
Your little prick wasn't in there.
No, but I'm guessing it was for years. But, no, it was just, I didn't really know what to expect when I got it, and it was just turned into being a beautiful character, and it was really awesome to see all these characters come together, because it didn't really mention that he had disability at all.
So, but didn't Vince write the character in honor of someone in his life?
It was a friend of his in college that passed away some time ago, and it was in memory of him to give back what he gave to him, and it was really cool to be able to say I'm the character that honors his friend.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. And, it's just one of those things when you have this role and you're like, wow, out of the thousands and thousands of people that auditioned for this, I get to honor Vince's friend and to be a part of this amazing cast.
That's cool. Yeah. That means you get to live to the end.
Yes.
But you realize you're really lucky that this is your first role and this is like the best show ever, like, to be a part of. Crazy.
It really is amazing to say that this was my very first project ever, and I'm like, people look at me and go, you bastard.
Exactly, you bastard.
It's like, how and why? It's just one of those moments where it's like, I got lucky.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. You deserve it. But the thing that I think is interesting is you worked so hard to, and correct me if I'm wrong, to lessen the symptoms of your condition, right?
I do have cerebral palsy, and it was actually, I've been working with it since I was 3 to actually get out of crutches and leg braces and the whole stuttering thing, and now I'm actually in the character where I have to use those, and every day I look at this and go, thank God I do not have to do this on a daily basis. This is killing my back.
Yeah, but here's the thing that's crazy is, you know, you work so hard to progress, and then your character is making you
regress.
Does that have any effect on you?
No, it really, it does and does not at the same time. It actually, the only effect it does have on me is that I can actually say that I've been through this and I've done this before, and I'm happy that I have this part, but I never in real life have to do this again. It's one of those things that you're like, it's really difficult, and people don't realize when they have the mobility to do certain things, when you have to take that away, like with Dean's character in the wheelchair, it's like when you have the mobility and then you take it away, you look back and you're like, wow, this would be horrible. It's like you don't see how people live with this, and then when you actually have to do it again, you're like, it's just one of those things that not very many people get the chance to see. And I am so lucky that I can actually play this role and look back at what I've overcome and say, thank God that I don't have to do this again.
Yeah, and you worked hard to get there.
I did.
And you're an inspiration to so many people.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one of the perks of the job is that I can inspire with my role. And it's truly an honor to be able to do that.
That's great. What was the audition process like for you, Dean?
I didn't have to audition.
Oh, you bastard.
There you go. Hey, the truth's the truth, right? Aaron? Now I can see why they can shoot this intense show.
Ridiculous.
And get through it and not, you know.
I auditioned Vince Gilligan.
There you go.
Oh, it's a drill.
I'm glad he made it through. Aaron, how about you?
I definitely auditioned, fought for this kid. And my first meeting was with Vince and Melissa Bernstein, one of our producers, and the casting. And I had worked with Melissa years ago on this little short film, and I had done an episode of X-Files. It wasn't one of Vince's episodes, but I played a role called Sky Commander Winky. And that was my character's name, but that was actually Vince's nickname in college.
Sky Commander Winky?
I have no idea why.
I don't want to know why.
Why do we want to know?
I think we've all kind of figured it out really fast.
And, well, because Vince asked me, he's like, what episode of X-Files did you do? I said, Lord of the Flies. He goes, oh, my God, that's right. You played Sky Commander Winky. I go, yeah, I did. He goes, that was my nickname in college. And so it just broke, you know, it just broke the ice, and he fought for me ever since then. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so,
that's good.
What has surprised you guys most about this show?
Whew.
Why are y'all looking at me?
We don't have an answer.
I'm constantly surprised.
Yeah.
I always think it's going in one direction, and then it really never goes that way. So I don't know. I'm always just so thrown.
I was surprised to see originally, and it continued to be a surprise for me. So many times you see things on paper, and then when you see it, you go, "Wow, what happened?" You know, you really like it. It happens a lot that you do that.
What do you mean? Like, what happened? Did something get cut? It just didn't work.
Because you read it and you go, well, this is awesome, you know?
Yeah.
But then you see it and you go, oh, man, you know? Because obviously people greenlight pilots all the time because they read, they go, oh, that's someone's, you know, there's something good there that we're going to do. So, and there were so many things off the words, like I said before, in the scripts. And so many shows don't play those things. You know, we have silences that you wouldn't ever hear on network TV.
I love that about
exactly,
the show.
Exactly.
The patience.
Exactly.
Remember the scene where Gus kills the guy, bloodied with the neck?
Yeah.
Just putting on his jacket, fixing his tie.
Right.
Yeah.
The patience is what I love.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And that they allowed that to happen. So from the pilot on, from reading the pilot and then seeing the pilot aired the first time, we watched it in a theater, and you went, wow, I've never seen a TV show that allowed all those moments to happen. And it continues to happen script after script. So that's what amazes me about this show.
No, it's definitely something that you don't see every day, and which is truly amazing that we're even on the air. It's because of those pauses. Usually when networks say when it goes dead, it's usually when they're killing the show, and we have these moments where it's just like just staring at each other going, wow. And
I remember we had a director who, and he's a great one of our better directors. It was his first time on the show, and he was used to directing fast, fast, fast. And there was a scene, I forgot what it was. I'm in the office, and I'm kind of ashamed, and I had to like leave. And he's like, okay, we're going to do that, boom, boom, and then boom, and we're going to cut there. And I'm like, I'm not sure you want to cut there, brother. I said, this is a little different kind of thing. He goes, really? I said, yeah, just let it play out for a while. And there was, you know, it was moments of really embarrassing moments of just silence of like, ugh. And you let that play for 30 seconds. It's really, and it just makes you go, ugh. Yeah. Whereas in regular TV, you're out, you're in the next thing, you're in the next thing, you know. And, you know.
It's just honest.
Yeah.
It's really real.
Raw and honest.
Yeah.
You know, for your role, did you do any kind of research? I mean, obviously, to have to play a meth addict and all of these
lots
things.
Lots and lots of drugs. No, no, not at all.
And I helped.
I mean, yes, he did. I did. I did a lot of research. Watched a lot of documentaries on just drug addicts and
lot of intervention.
And it's incredible what you can find online and on YouTube, actually. Just people, you know, using drugs, and it's just in their pure, raw state. I definitely did that a lot.
Hank, or Dean, which storyline was cooler to play as Hank? The one where you were suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder?
Mm-hmm.
Or becoming handicapped?
the post-traumatic stress disorder.
Why?
It's always more fun, at least for me as an actor, to play a character breaking down than a character starting to recover. I mean, it's just, I'm sure other people do it better. But for me, it was much more interesting to see this really boorish, bravado guy having to all the way down to I don't think I'm the guy I used to be, versus now I'm trying to get back into the thing. It's a different kind of dynamic, and it was for me it was much more that storyline was better and more fun to play.
And the wheelchair Did it just make life easier on set? Because I was like, that could be tiring, but it could be really a great way to be lazy, too.
That's right, yeah, right.
What were the minerals about? Right? Doesn't everyone want to know what the minerals were about? Because everything means something in this show. The colors, the angles, the shots, everything has meaning. And the minerals, I keep hearing in the after-show podcast that you guys do, that they don't mean anything. And it keeps upsetting me because I'm like, Hank, I want to get to the bottom of it. I think there's something behind the minerals.
We have to wait for season 5 and 6.
Okay, are you teasing me because you're just teasing me or because I'm onto something?
You might.
Yeah, I'm onto something.
You never know.
Kevin, wherever you are, I was right.
AfterBuzz TV exclusive.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. So a broad question about Gus. Well, actually, I'm not going to go to that one because I already kind of know that because of what happened today. So I'm going to go back to you, Dean. Is Hank as good a DEA agent when Heisenberg was right under his nose all along?
You know, that's always a question that comes up, and I got to defend the guy here. The premise of the show is that he is so milquetoast and so unbelievably not this guy that he can hide in plain sight. And it's a very truthful thing. I mean, look at parents have their kids living under their own, roofs, and they can't tell that they're drug addicts and this and that. When you have somebody pegged a certain way, and you had them pegged that way for 20 years, you know, how long we've known, how long I've been married to Marie, all these facts, they don't lead to that. They lead to something else, you know. And that was that's kind of a basic premise of the show, is that he would never suspect this guy. Nobody would suspect this guy. And so I think Hank keeps finding, he keeps getting close to Jesse Pinkman. He figures out Gus. Yeah. He's smart enough to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't want to say he's not smart enough. He just doesn't put the pieces together with Walt, you know. And it's because of that, you know. And I think that's a truthful thing. You see somebody a certain way, it takes a lot for the guy, especially when they're related to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing about it. It's not like he's just some random guy you go piecing together. This is like the guy you have Thanksgiving dinner with, you know. And all of a sudden, you're supposed to come to this conclusion that he's this guy.
100%.
It's just when it does come, I think that's going to be a really interesting interesting thing.
But you play it so well because sometimes when you take him on these little road trips or whatever, you have this kind of thing where I'm like, does he kind of know? Is he onto him and he's using him?
Right.
Right? Doesn't he play that like line so well?
Yeah. Well, I think there might be some subconscious things that come through with that. And I also think there's other dynamics. A lot of times, like, I'm ribbing him. You know, like, I think he's nervous about, you know, that we're being this police thing.
Yeah.
So he's nervous for another reason. I think he's nervous because we're doing this police thing, and I'm trying to ease his pain. So there's a lot of different levels there of nervousness and what he means and blah, blah, blah. But I really don't think that he consciously has a suspicion of Walt.
And I'm just watching nervous for everybody.
Right.
RJ, how hard is it? Because as we talked about earlier, you know, even though this has been so many seasons, it's really over a year. And you're still having to play a 15 or 16-year-old, but you play it with such innocence still. You do such a great job of it, even though you're 19 or 20 now?
19. I just literally turned 19 August.
Yeah.
Me and Aaron have...
Happy belated birthday.
thank you. And it's interesting because it's like getting his first car. It's like I've had a car for like 4 years now. It's just one of those things that's like, okay, I'm doing it again.
Yeah, how many cars do you have?
Ooh,
it's like 5, right?
Well,
really?
So how many are still running?
I like this.
How many have been crashed?
At the moment, I have 0.
No, what happened?
I had 2 car accidents.
What?
I was on pass in Burbank, and so I missed a turn and slammed on the brakes. That car hit that car. And I drove from Albuquerque, New Mexico to L.A. that whole day. And it's a 14-hour car ride. And I did it by myself. And I was on my way home, and I went home, and I was going to go to the store to pick up groceries. And I was on my way to the store. And when that happened, my brakes from overusing them for driving from the desert to L.A., my brakes were worn down, and they were hot. So when I slammed my brakes to dodge that, And my brakes didn't lock up, and it just skidded me into them and totaled my car.
No way.
And 3 weeks later, I was on the 134 driving to my manager's house, and two cars pulled alongside of me and started hitting me on each side because they were racing, and they were trying to use me as a way to beat the other car out. And they pinned me in, and then they threw me against four other cars.
What?
And it totaled,
what?
Yeah, and it totaled that car. So at the moment, I thank God I have a very good friend that's a private driver. He's been driving me everywhere.
I get a private driver, too. Jesus, that's scary. Yeah.
But I'm looking at another car at the moment.
Yeah, you asked for a preview.
You asked for
a preview of the first episode, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I know, right?
This is people.
But, so at the moment, zero cars.
Wow. It's okay, funny. But are you a sports fanatic? Sports car fanatic? Like, what are you into?
Well, yes.
Definitely
no.
Not into that cruiser your mom bought you on the show.
No. It's an interesting. The cruiser is like very weird compared to my other cars. I had two roadsters, and it was like I was driving my roadsters, and then I'd get into the Dodge Challenger and feel familiar, and then I go from that to the PT Cruiser, and I'm like, oh my God, this is like night and day.
This guy's got a badass car.
Yes.
What do you got?
I heard.
He scared me. We went one time.
Yeah, we went out.
It was a convertible. I don't know. What is it? Shelby 67?
65 Shelby Cobra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I looked at it, and I'm like, no effing way I'm getting that with you.
Oh, you won.
And I did.
Yeah.
There's no airbags.
Absolutely no
airbags.
Yeah, no airbags in that. I have a 62 Corvair, no airbags in that either.
Yeah,
you're nice. Just going for it, and yeah. I'm unsafe at any speed.
That's solid steel, though, so if you hit, that car will go through a brick wall.
Yeah.
And keep on going.
So what are you looking at next?
I went from two Mercedes to now I'm about to go back to. I used to have a Honda Ridgeline truck, but it got stolen.
Worse luck. The cars.
That's episode 3.
Yeah.
You weren't meant to have a driver, my friend. Yeah. It's over.
Did it get stolen in Albuquerque?
It got stolen in Albuquerque. We got done with second year of filming. I left town on a Sunday, and my house got broken into on a Monday. The bad part is they broke into my house. They passed my security code. Like they went in with some James Bond crap, and like literally they shut down my security code. Went into my house. Stole like all my electronics, my TVs, loaded them into my truck, and then proceeded to drive my truck out of my house. So
I've never heard of that before.
And I get a call from my next door neighbor saying, RJ, I don't see your truck. Are you home? I'm like, no. Should I be? They're like, your truck's missing. The garage is open. Your alarm's not going. We're going to go in. And I was like, call 911. I'm in L.A., and they're like, we're calling 911. I called some friends in Albuquerque. They go to handle it. The house is trashed. Like, my car's missing. I was just like, oh, yes, wow. The life of RJ Mitty.
Sounds like a Jesse Pinkman party.
I mean, honestly, what are we going to do?
Sounds like a Badger Pinkman party right there.
Did they ever find your...
No. Yeah. Well, and Albuquerque does not have LoJack. It's illegal to activate your LoJack in the state of New Mexico.
That's so crazy.
So they never found my car. It's somewhere in New Mexico, actually, because as soon as my car hits the Mexican border, my LoJack kicks on. So I'm figuring it's burnt somewhere.
Or someone's having fun.
Yeah, joyride. But needless to say, I'm going to get another Honda, but the one I'm looking at actually looks like Tron, the inside of it. It looks literally like Tron. It's all... blue lighting, LED lights, like the whole nine yards is going to be in it.
Nice.
Sure, that'll change your life.
With a security guard attached.
I'm looking into the GPS trackers that you can carry around with you. So if your car starts taking off, you can pick it up and find it anywhere you need it.
These are good things to start thinking about. I like it. You're thinking ahead.
I have literally the worst car luck ever.
Okay, well, we're going to turn that around. Everyone's going to send him good car energy when the show is over. Good car energy to RJ. Tell me which season has been your favorite so far.
I think this is my personal favorite. Yeah. It just gets darker and darker.
Is that more fun and more fun?
Yeah, I think so. What about you?
It's hard for me to say, you know. It's like saying your favorite kid, you know, because I look back at, sometimes yeah. I'll go back and look at season one, man, and every one of those dudes they hang in there, man. They're like, mm-hmm. look at that pilot, and you look at, you know, so I mean, this is obviously one of the great seasons, but it's hard for me to say. I think they're all equally. It's hard for me to really, it would be hard for me to honestly say that I thought one season was better than the other. And if you do go back sometime late at night and you watch any of the first 7 episodes and you go, wow, this is completely different TV. Mm-hmm. And they hold up for me.
So. I definitely feel the same way that Dean does. It's every season is just so amazing and beautiful at what we've came up with. And the crew is what made it happen. And it really is cool to see all this come together and see this art that we made. And as you look at these seasons and you look at the show, you look at this and go, wow, the beauty of what we bring and the beauty of what our DP brings and the directors is just insane. But literally every season surprises me, and I can't wait for the next.
I have a question from a friend of mine that I wanted to include here. He's a big fan of the show. His name is Jason. And he wanted to ask you, Dean, in some ways, Hank is the only character on the show who's maintained an absolute ethical code, with exception of lying a little for Murray.
Yeah.
He's received nothing but suffering in return for his integrity. Walt Sr., conversely, surprises us at every turn with the violence and coldness he's capable of rationalizing. Despite the friendly relations between the characters and the chemistry between you and Bryan Cranston, do you think the arc of the show is driving Hank and Walt to some kind of showdown?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's definitely. I mean, Vince is a guy that, what I see him as is a guy, he thinks in operatic terms, he thinks in big strokes, he looks at justice and karma and those kinds of things. And I think he's going to, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I know he's going to confront that. I mean, Hank's the only guy who didn't break bad. He had a chance to lie and save his job after he beat up Jesse Pinkman. Everybody wanted him to lie. There, it would have been easy to do, and he just wanted a clean soul. And he said, "No, I'm going to take the consequences." Now, what that got him was shot.
Yeah.
but he did stay alive. And I don't know. There's a kernel of justice inside Vince Gilligan that kind of convinces me that at some level. I don't know what he's going to do, but he's going to confront that very issue, I think.
Well, and I wonder, will your character have that same kind of, you know, allegiance family-wise? You know, like, are you going to, if you find this out in a way that nobody else finds it out, will you cover up for... Right.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I don't think it's obvious at all that he finds out and he breasts him. I think he could try to get him out of it. I think he could. I don't know. Maybe he does break bad. Maybe I don't know. That's the name of the show.
So
maybe
that's.
Yeah,
you know. Is Hank gonna break bad?
So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I do. As you were talking about in honor of Vince's friend, I do know that Vince also has friends in the DEA, and I don't know if he has a tough time portraying them as anything other than trying to do good. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's the one guy who's going to try to do. I mean, I think the Jesse Pinkman character is really a real trying to do good character. You know, I think he's a real moral character, despite the fact that he had to kill Gil, and he's much more moral than Walter White.
Yeah.
But your killings were all in those situations where it was do or die.
Right. Yeah.
So, right? And you obviously had moral issues with it, and you were really messed up by it.
Yeah. So messed up by it. But yeah, Vince has stated numerous times that he believes that Jesse's almost like the moral compass. What do you say? The moral compass of the show. But yeah, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? You know?
What about your relationship with Gus this season? It was such a confusing thing. And even at the end of this episode, what I think was cool was like you were like, so he did have to die, right? Like you're
still
confused.
Still questioning. You know, his actions, and yeah, I don't know. I love the relationship between that Jesse and Mike has started to build this last season. He's such an interesting guy, but I'm so happy that Gus is gone. I mean, and you know, I gotta say, I mean, what an amazing, brilliant, brilliant character, and Giancarlo Esposito, he couldn't be farther from that character. He's on set in yoga positions, like meditating, and he's just the nicest guy, and he always wants to send out love and energy. This is how he speaks. He's like, I send you so much love and energy to you. I'm like, thank you. I do as well, back. I love you. Yeah.
No, he truly is like one of the nicest guys, but he plays as such dark characters. It's kind of creepy that he has that. It's like Vince, they have that monster inside of him to be this person. It's like...
They have it. Do you guys know where your characters are going to end up? Because now, I mean, clarify this for everyone who doesn't know, because I know I talked to you outside about this, but you guys are going to do, it seems, 16 episodes, broken up 8 and 8, so you'll have 2 final seasons, right?
Yeah, it's still kind of, I mean, nothing's set in stone, but that's kind of the rumors that have been floating around. So, yeah, it'll be 8 and 8. But, you know, who knows, they could just do... back, but I'm not.
They won't do that.
Yeah.
No.
But it could be 10 and 6. I don't know.
It could be 10 and 6. Who knows? I don't know.
There'll be some sort of break in terms of, that's what everyone's been saying, so I don't know. I'm sure that's what's going to happen.
But in terms of where, at least, you know, where my character's going, I have no idea where it's headed.
No idea. Dean, you guys don't know RJ?
No, zero.
No clue.
Less than zero.
Which is kind of the exciting part of all this,
it's,
right?
It's great. It's great. Yeah, they don't tell us anything.
Any theories?
I mean, I want. I mean, I think Jesse should live. at least until the very last
end.
Episode. I mean, I wouldn't mind having Jesse go out in, you know, blaze of glory. But I just want him to be around. You know.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have a job.
Yeah.
True that.
And what was the most challenging part of shooting this show for you guys?
Working with these two guys.
I can tell.
Working with Dean's actually a real challenge. it's just when we see Dean on the call sheet, we're like, Dean Norris.
Yeah. Do you guys like shooting in New Mexico?
That's why I like it. What?
Do you guys like shooting in New Mexico?
I do. I like New Mexico.
I think it's great. I actually, during the pilot, I was like, oh God. I just... Oh, my God.
Ooh. Really?
Oh.
Who's this?
After Buzz TV exclusive.
I love you, Mom. Bye.
Aww.
Hey!
Yeah. Sure you do.
Theories. Is that where we're on
the cell phone?
We were on... I don't know. Where were we?
Sorry. Damn it.
Oh, yeah, shooting.
Oh, the hardest
thing
to shoot. Oh, yeah. During the pilot, sorry. I hated Albuquerque. I didn't understand the city or the state. But when we got picked up, I absolutely fell in love with everything about it. My girl came out this season, and right when she got off the plane, she's like, oh, my God. Wow. I mean, do you like being out here? And I could tell. I'm like, no, just wait. Just give it a chance. And she fell in love with it pretty quickly. I mean, it's a beautiful place. Skies are endless. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, I think it's great. I love it. I come from the Midwest anyway, and it's very the people are very cool, nice. It's beautiful. I like it's different food. I also think it's nice for our show because I get it's nice to be away from L.A. and Hollywood and trucks on every corner and, you know, this that whole kind of thing. It at least allows me to kind of, in a way, get into my character more, get away from, you know, because all you got to do, I don't have my family out there with me, so I sit in a hotel room and, you know, and it allows you just to concentrate on doing the work and without the distractions of being where you live.
Yeah.
You know?
I definitely enjoy it very well, and we've all made friends over the years, and when we were filming in Albuquerque, I actually have family in Albuquerque. I have a couple of cousins, so It was Albuquerque. It's like I grew up in like Texas and Louisiana. So I was always used to traveling. So wherever I go, it's like I make it my home temporarily while I'm there, and then when I leave, it's just another part of one place I've been. So
yeah, nice. You know, I got to tell this. This is such a funny story. It has to do with RJ. So there's a token place that you take, you know, people that are visiting. It's the Sandia Mountains. It's the world's longest.
Tram.
Yeah, it's a tram. So I go up there, on the way down, this girl that was working at this restaurant at the top of the mountain comes up to me and says, "I just love your show." And I go, "Oh, thank you so much." And she's like, "I see the other guy up here all the time." I go, "Who?" He's like, "He plays Walt Jr., RJ. I go, "You do?" He's like, "Yeah, he's up here all the time. He's always with a different girl." It's so great.
Nice.
Well
done.
Man.
Ladies man. He is such a stallion.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Aaron.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's awesome. Yeah.
Busted.
It happens. Don't hate. It's
beautiful up there. It's romantic.
It really is. It's like if you ever get a chance to go to Albuquerque, Sandia Peaks is really one of the places.
You'll see him up there.
You'll see me up there. Come on.
Blondes, brunettes, all types.
If it's Monday. It usually depends on the week, the time, the day.
Oh, no.
Who answers their phone?
Have you taken her?
Who answers their phone?
Have you guys gone to Las Cruces at all?
Yeah.
White Sands?
White Sands is gorgeous.
Beautiful,
yeah.
Right?
Carlsbad Caverns. Have you guys been up there?
Yeah. Have you all... oh, my God. I just dropped... up north by Taos, Red River. Have you all checked that out? Really, it looks like Santa's Village, which you think, like, when they have it in cartoon books, it's like, it literally looks like Santa Village.
In New Mexico?
In New Mexico, because it's on the Colorado border.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
Love it.
All right, well, guys, listen, we have some eager fans who are wanting to ask some questions. Are you up for it?
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to go to some questions.
Is this on? Yes, it is. Okay, we've got Will here. Will, right? Yeah. Are you guys set up?
Hey, I wanted to know how the story arc developed. You said that, like, with the first season, they had it all kind of worked out. Do you know if it's episode by episode for the seasons after that? Because so many left turns that it's impossible to follow.
How they arc out each season, they just board it on this big giant board in the writer's room. And it seems like a very kind of complicated process, but they don't go each episode by episode. I mean, they kind of have kind of bullet points where they want to head to, but
I think they mostly play it by ear. It's like they kind of just throw darts at a board.
No,
I think they talk about it as being a really organic kind of discussion about how things are going, and they try to write themselves, and you know, and they challenge themselves by writing themselves into a corner. Then they all sit there and figure out how to get out of it, you know. So that's why the left turns come. You know, I think they're willing to put themselves in a tough situation, and then say, okay, we got to have the writing power between the seven of us, I guess, to get us out of this.
Oh,
and that's when they come up with this good stuff. You know, that's how it's been related to me. Some of the best twists and turns come from exactly that.
Yeah.
Having to write yourself out of the situation.
Yeah.
That's
but instead of
really
like taking the easy way out and go, well, we're gonna leave a little here for like, how about F you? We're gonna stick you right there in the corner. Now you figure out how to get out, you know? And then they do.
Yeah, and I guess Vince knows how he wants to end the series, like the final episode, but how he's gonna get there, he has no idea.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, next question.
All right, Luchan, here you go.
Hi. I was just wondering if you guys know, I think it's the most brilliantly written show. Do you guys know how Vince Gilligan came up with this concept? Because he's not from New Mexico, right? He's from, like, the South or Mississippi or something?
Virginia.
Yeah, he's from Virginia. Yeah. And actually, it was originally supposed to take place in...
California, Riverside.
Riverside. But we moved it out to New Mexico because of the tax incentives. But, yeah, I mean, how...
Him and Tom Schnaz is one of the writers.
Yeah.
We're in college-ish, and they were saying, like, hey, if this writing thing doesn't work out, we're going to get an RV.
Oh, yeah, RV.
He attributed to Tom Schnaz, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to get an RV and cook some drugs and ride around.
So he is dark
and crazy.
And
that was a long time ago. But that was a long time ago. You know, way back, I think, in college, literally. Because Tom Schnaz and he were in college together.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
roommates even,
yeah.
right? Yeah. So I think that's what I've heard those guys talk about. And,
yeah.
and then later on, it became this thing, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, right?
And you know what? When we were shooting the pilot in New Mexico, a principal was actually arrested. Was it in New Mexico or in Arizona?
It was in New Mexico.
New Mexico for selling
drugs
to
Stop
students.
It.
Yeah, and I think meth.
It was actually because they thought it was based on that. Like I get people saying, "Was this based on the like
copycat?"
So, literally, when we were shooting the pilot, this guy got busted. It was so strange.
Do you guys shred your scripts afterwards?
No, I actually still have all
you keep
of my.
Them?
I post them on the internet.
Yeah.
I have a stack like.
Yeah.
AfterBuzzTV.com/.
Yeah,
Dean
exactly.
Yeah.
Perfect. We got another question,
yeah,
Paul?
I've got a question. And for Dean and, well, for any of you, just from an acting perspective. So like, Dean, you come up against something like. The post-traumatic stress or being in a wheelchair, but a lot of the time Hank's only got short scenes on any given episode. Walt's often got, you know, like you get a chance to see him organically go through stuff.
Right.
You and Betsy are filling in huge gaps in a very short amount of time. I mean, how do you approach that as an actor? Is that your hotel room time? Like, how do you, you know, map that out so it's authentic and you know exactly where you are in that arc every single time you're in front of the camera?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because it's really difficult sometimes to be able to portray. And so I think it requires you to just try to be that, inhabit that character, inhabit those words as much as you can. You can't think about, I'm going to try to put all this stuff into that little scene. You just have to let that go and be alive and inhabit those moments and hope that that's enough, that it portrays the character that you are. Because you don't have as many words, you don't have as many things to do it. But if you try to put that in, it would mess it up.
Your head will explode.
Exactly.
You look like Gus walking out
exactly,
of that door.
Exactly, right, exactly.
But I mean, but does research help in that in terms of, you know, knowing what the reality of an arc like that might be?
Yeah, research helps a lot, particularly in the PTSD and the wheelchair thing.
Right.
Just to know, for me, it wasn't the physicality as much as it was the mental, you know, of having to deal with that stuff. And I think if you just put yourself in that place and then you say whatever words you have, you hope that it comes out that way. You hope that it's portrayed that, you know what I'm saying? You stay real to the words,
yeah.
But you give it the feelings, the thoughts that you've had about what this guy is, blah, blah, blah. You just try to inhabit that character and say the words at the same time, and you hope that that's enough.
And Aaron, was that your experience with, like, the grieving, perhaps, say, getting over Jane or dealing with killing Gail? Like those arcs of time through time are really fascinating. How one, all the different, you know, layers.
Yeah, no, those. It's so crazy. I mean, it's brutal. You know, Jesse is just always in a constant state of turmoil, and if not that, he's constantly being beaten up or, you know, going to the hospital. It's pretty brutal, because my whole process is to feel like I'm, you know, truly living these experiences. And so, you know, during these really hard emotional kind of scenes, I'm just reliving these moments over and over again. So it's pretty draining.
And RJ, what about for you? I mean, you're watching your dad kind of spiral down. You know, everyone's dad's their hero. Your dad's kind of like, how much do you suspect something? Do you suspect something deeper is going on, like the gambling? How did you deal with that?
Well, mostly with Walt Jr., I prepare for breakfast because that's almost every scene that I have goes on at the breakfast table. But I know. My stories sound crazy, like the whole just becoming acting, just getting this role, like my car accidents, all this crazy stuff. And I've actually, in a way, have dealt with Breaking Bad in my own life. Like, yeah. I've dealt with certain issues. Like, I've seen the cancer thing. I've seen the gambling thing. I've seen drug issues. I've seen all these different issues in actually my real life. Like, I grew up, like, pretty much living the same life I play on character.
So it's like some kind of odd artistic catharsis.
Yeah, and it's kind of scary to see this actually being portrayed on TV, that it's like, I had something very similar happen to me like that. And then I'm like, oh, I should not tell people that. And then it's just one of those things where I'm lucky enough to bring real life to this life.
Well, some things are just meant to be, and maybe that's what it's all about.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely has come together, and it's been really interesting and a fantastic ride on this trip, and I'm ready to see where it goes from here.
Awesome. John Comerford?
Quick follow-up about the acting. So when, Aaron, you had that scene at the AA meeting, you had that basically a four-minute monologue, and Dean, you had one when you were laying out the case to Gomi and the guys. When you see those pages, is that daunting for you? Are you excited about doing that kind of a long scene? It's just a and it's basically just you locked down, no cutaways. Do you like that, or it's like, oh my god, I gotta memorize all that? What's that process like for you?
I count the days off I'm not gonna have. Trying to learn that.
Yeah. I love it because the writing is just so just pure and honest, and I love those big kind of chunky dialogue scenes. It just gives you an opportunity to kind of just play with it.
They're written so brilliantly that it's like acting 101, man. If you just go back to it and let the words come out and understand the images of each word and, you know, just let them play. You don't have to add that much to it. You just have to discover the truth of those monologues, because it's in there. They give it to you. It's like, you know, you just have to see it, be it, feel it, and you just let the words come out, because they're written so... hard acting is when you get bad writing. And you got to, well, I got to sell this, you know what I'm saying? But when you read those, you go, oh, yes, and you feel the arc, and it just brings it, and it just comes right along, and you got to find it and learn it, but it's in there. It's not like you have to try to add stuff to it, I find. I think you just have to kind of let it breathe, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's definitely fun. I finally had a scene where I said more than three words a paragraph with Brian a couple of episodes ago, and it's just... when you get those scenes that you can actually say, just take it and go and live in that moment, it's just really, really rare to find that there's so many dialogues and different parts of the script that you can actually be in that moment, because, as Dean was saying, there's so much bad writing in other shows and other scripts that you have to sell it. And this, you don't have to sell, you just do.
Okay, and RJ, one follow-up real quick. When you were reading the script where Walt, your father, calls you Jesse, was that a huge surprise coming to you?
It was horribly, horribly scary to see that his life is merging with his family. And I don't think, who is this Jesse? It's just one of those things where it's like, wow, did that really just happen? Is like, is he forgetting his son? It's like, his son is being taken over by another one. And it's just, Walt's life is actually becoming, his drug world is actually becoming more important than his family world. And it's going to be scary and sad to see how this ends, because no good can come of actually calling your son the wrong name. It's like saying the wrong name in bed. It just goes downhill from there.
Which hopefully you haven't experienced
yet.
No. Oh, wow.
Well, what's going to happen is, in the next season, you're probably going to find out who Jesse is, because you didn't know who Jesse was
so
when that happened.
So excited for that. Yeah. I can't wait to have a scene with Aaron. And,
no, we've never worked together.
It's usually, I'm getting on set when he's getting off, so it's really...
It's not that fun, trust me.
Which leads me to AfterBuzz predictions. We do that every episode, so it's time for...
And now, your AfterBuzz
Okay, so usually I do this with my guys, so I don't know. I mean, obviously, you guys are my new guys.
There you go.
But I don't know how much you're going to tell me. But you guys can predict what you think is going to happen with your characters, and we'll start with you, Aaron, and we'll go all the way down the line. I mean, I think we all kind of see what's coming. You know, there is going to be some kind of showdown between Walt and Hank, and you're going to find out everything that's gone on with your dad, and you're going to have to reconcile the fact that, you know, your dad is this heinous person on one hand, but then he's still your dad, and so many things are just going to just explode.
Yeah. I have no idea. I mean, I'm hoping the RV comes back, and, you know, Walt and Jesse in the middle of the desert cooking meth is always a good time.
The old-fashioned way.
I can't imagine Jesse not being able or not finding out about Jane and Brock. And I think Hank's gonna take Walt down. Or at least, you know, kind of find out what he's up to. But I have no idea.
I predict.
Yeah, what do you predict?
Here it comes.
Scary.
That whatever we and all your guys predict is going to be completely wrong.
Awesome. I do know this. Walt is winning for right this moment, but he's about to start losing again. Because once you start to find out your stuff, and you start to find out your stuff, and you start to find out your stuff, Walt's already losing.
I think that's fair to say.
That's that I know, right?
Yeah.
Everybody agree?
Yeah.
Okay. Definitely. What do you think, RJ?
I have no idea. Again, every time I read a script, I'm scared to see that who's going to die next. And it's just one of those things where you really do not know until you have that script in your hand and you're actually filming it of what can or will happen. And with Breaking Bad, you just... The show is called Breaking Bad for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really going to be awesome that... I'm hoping to get to work with Aaron. And... I think eventually that our paths are going to cross, and it's just bound to happen, and it's going to be interesting to see where Dean goes with the wheelchair.
I'm out of the wheelchair, man.
The wheelchair's done.
The wheelchair's done. I blew that up.
So you think. Never know.
That's true. You do never know.
But, well, and I have to say, you know, Skylar's character and Marie have been incredible, too. So I know we didn't get to talk about them much, but that was because they weren't here.
Yeah.
But, you know, Skylar's become like mini Heisenberg. Who knew she had it in her, but she's...
They're definitely become the strippers.
There's the prediction. So,
that's a new one.
And before I leave it out again... The writers of this show deserve so much credit for such an incredible four seasons and more to come. Your DP, tell him I love him. Your production designers, everyone on this show.
Sound and music.
Yes. The sound, the music, absolutely. And forgive me for leaving that out.
And they're both like two separate departments. I mean, the music's spectacular, but also the sound, every creak, every crunch, everything. It's just like,
everything. Incredible. Everything's incredible. So let's put that on the table. And before we go, I want to see what else is coming up for you guys, what you're working on outside of here. And if you see me shaking, it's because I'm freezing. Sorry, I can't even, like, burr. You guys are all bundled up. I was not smart. Okay, I'm okay.
I'm just hanging out.
You're filming a movie, right?
Well, yeah. I'm doing a movie right now. It's called Smashed. It's about a husband and wife. It's a couple who is just addicted to, well, look at this.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drinking. The wife, she's a third grade teacher. And she ends up puking in front of her class one day. And she realizes that she might have a problem. So she decides to try and go sober. And that causes some sort of conflicts in the relationship, because they both realize that's kind of what they had in common. And that's what... made the relationship exciting and vibrant. And so, it's a nice little family story.
After this, we need a comedy, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Dean?
I've just been working on some TV shows. I just hosted a History Channel thing called The Stoned Ages.
Oh, yeah.
I have a movie in the can already with Mel Gibson that hopefully will come out at some point. Ooh. Maybe.
Oh, nice. Definitely.
Which one was that, by the way?
It's called How I Spent My Summer Vacation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's still, I think they're still waiting
figuring
to see.
It out. Yeah. Waiting for that turnaround.
Yeah.
That upswing.
Waiting to see how that plays.
Yeah, got it. Nice. RJ, what do you got going on?
I'm actually executive producing a documentary at the moment, actually about a case in New Mexico. Tara Calico, it was, she disappeared in like 1988, and it's still an open kidnapping case, and a picture of her in the 90s showed up. I'm sure y'all saw it on the news about the woman that was bound and gagged with a boy in the back of a van. This picture wound up in the parking lot in Port Joe, Florida. And it was the last picture I've ever seen of her again. And I've been doing a documentary and a fundraiser for this because they know where her body is. They know the people that did it, but it was a cover-up. And they can't get it because New Mexico law, if you do not have a body, if you do not have people talking, they cannot go and check it out. So we've been doing that, and I've been working with them on that. But other than that, I've been looking for work. So anyone out there, I'm ready to go.
Got it. Very nice. Well, we produce some films. They're all comedies, so
nice.
we'll let you know if we got a good
Sound
comedy because you guys need a little a little of that in your lives.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up our Breaking Bad AfterBuzz season finale. I want to thank Dean Norris. I want to thank Aaron Paul and RJ Mitty for joining us today, as well as our AfterBuzz crew who worked tirelessly to put this together along with everyone here at the John Lovitz Club. Thank you guys so much. Thank you guys for coming, and we hope to do more of these. And maybe we'll be back next season talking about the final season with you guys.
Thank you so much for the support.
Of course.
It was a blast. Thank you.
Thank
all right,
you all
guys,
for watching.
Thank you.
From producers Kevin Undergaro and Phil Svitek, engineer DJ Jesse Janity, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. If you have questions or comments, be sure to buzz us at info@afterbuzztv.com. And you can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter by searching for AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.
See you later.
Okay.
Oh well, buzz you later.
What? We're getting buzzed later?
I forgot. What? Yeah. Okay. Right at the end of the